This is Amateur Radio Newsline, report number 1964, with the release date of Friday, May the 8th, 2015. To follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. Amateur Radio continues its work in earthquake-ravaged Nepal. Temporary access to 4 meters is made available in Germany for sporadic e-season. The digital ham TV transmitter comes alive from the ISS. Congress continues pressing the Federal Communications Commission on proposed field bureau closures. And radio back on the farm. All this and more on Amateur Radio Newsline, report number 1964, coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Here is Fred Vobey, W8HDU.
Ham Radio continues to provide service to the people of Nepal in the wake of the devastating earthquake that hit back on Saturday, April the 25th. So far, more than 7,500 people are reported dead, with at least 14,500 injured and tens of thousands left homeless. Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, has the latest.
The pace of emergency communications has not slowed on most of the international links, which have functioned since the first hours of the disaster. Operations are taking place on a number of frequencies in the 40, 20, and 15-meter bands, with 9N1SP specifically maintaining contacts with the United States Mars or Military Auxiliary Radio System. 9N1AJ is another station identified as providing the Nepal end of the Mars radio path. It is expected that the circuit will eventually be reduced to a periodic schedule to keep the lines of communications open. Two amateur radio stations appear to have started operating from some of the hard-to-reach rural areas of Nepal. They are identified as 9N3AA in Damohuli and 9N1SD in Sumbalpurtachak. These locations are reportedly a 4 to 5 day trek from the capital city of Kathmandu. Operators are reported on their way to other devastated regions, with some expected to take to the airways by the time you hear this newscast. Also, a repeater donated by the group CAN-USA that had been held by Nepalese customs is now reported by 9N1SP as released and ready for deployment. It will complement the current 9N1KS 70-centimeter to 2-meter crossband repeater set up in 2012. Many radio amateurs from other countries remain active in the area as the post-earthquake communication needs have not significantly diminished. Nepal has very few licensed amateur radio operators, which is why hams from other countries have traveled to it to provide their help. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF in Los Angeles.
Hams worldwide are reminded that Nepal emergency traffic may be heard on any frequency in the amateur bands, as it's not always possible for that nation's hams to operate on the IARU emergency channel of activities frequencies. If you hear the words emergency communication, please stand by or move to a different frequency so you can give the rescue operators more room to work. Over the past several years, an international team of radio amateurs have been working to spur amateur growth in Nepal. There are few hams in that nation, and this effort was put to the test in the aftermath of the recent earthquake that struck near the capital of Kathmandu. Led from the United States by a group called Radio Mala, under the guidance of Shersha Hoja, W6KTM, the team has been working with the government officials and universities in Nepal to promote acceptance of amateur radio by a government that has traditionally not allowed licensing by average citizens. Historically, the area around Kathmandu has experienced a major earthquake about every 75 years, and the last major quake occurred over 79 years ago. To help support disaster response communications in the wake of the latest earthquake, Radio Mala's volunteers lobbied the Nepal government to open ham radio to all citizens and help get Nepalese trained and licensed. David Witkowski, W6DTW, is a strategic advisor to Radio Mala. He said that in the days after the earthquakes, communications into the Kathmandu Valley were sporadic. There's also some cellular data, but systems were overloaded. Wired internet was mostly working into the area, and although slow communications via email, texting, and Twitter were possible. According to W6DTW, the repeater system activated last year in Kathmandu has seen heavy use for civilian disaster relief coordination. Dr. Sanjeev Pandey, 9N1SP, has been using an HF station donated by Radio Mala to the university in Kathmandu to pass high-frequency radio communications with relief operators in the Mideast. This effort is continuing, and you can find out more at facebook.com/hamradio.mala, M-A-L-A. Sunspot AR2339 unleashed an intensive X2-class solar flare on May the 5th at approximately 2211 UTC. Radiation generated caused strong radio blackouts on the Pacific side of the Earth, interference with communications at frequencies below 20 megahertz. The blast also hurtled a coronal mass ejection, or a CME, into space, but not toward Earth. This event could herald a sustained period of high solar, as AR2339 is being described as both large and explosive. More information can be found at www.spaceweather.com. The Deutsche Amateur Radio Club reports that hams in Germany will have access to 70.150 MHz to 70.180 MHz in the 4-meter band during the sporadic E season. This after publication of an announcement in the Official Journal of Communications on April the 29th. Holders of that nation's Class A license are able to use a limited portion of the band from now until August the 31st. Maximum transmission power is 25 watts effective radiated power with a maximum bandwidth of 12 kilohertz and horizontal polarization. Since amateur radio is a secondary user of that spectrum, it has to ensure the protection of other primary radio services. As of Friday, May 1st, the ham video transmitter on board the Columbus module of the International Space Station is powered on and is transmitting in its blank transmission, or BT, mode. In this mode, the transmitter is operating without camera, but the digital TV signal is fully formatted. From a technical perspective, the BT signal is all that is needed for testing and fine-tuning ground stations. To that end, the European network of chained ground stations is nearly complete. 6 stations span the continent in an X formation. For each ascending and descending pass over Europe, 4 of these stations provide about 10 minutes of solid copy. The chained ground stations are streamed to the British Amateur Television Club server, which has been set up a multiple viewer page at www.batc.tv. This webpage shows all 16 streams, with each view having the ability to be maximized to full screen. This operation mode is dubbed ARISS Ham TV. The video transmitter will stay on as long as orbit operations permit. When the ground stations are operating reliably, the transmitter will be used to enhance ARISS school contacts. Uplink for audio will remain VHF only. It's time for you to identify your station. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the WC8OH repeater, serving Kettering, Ohio. The United States Army will quit teaching Morse code to soldiers at its training center in Fort Huachuca in Arizona. The Army has used the code since shortly after its invention by Samuel Morse in 1844. During the Civil War, both the Union and Confederate armies relied heavily on Morse code, but its use decreased significantly since World War II. These days, the military has satellites and other channels of communication that offer voice services and text messaging to the battlefield. But for the overall military, Morse is not completely going away. Because some forces still use the code, troops that need to know it will have the option of going to an Air Force-sponsored course taught in Texas. A follow-up to last week's story on congressional reaction to the proposed closure of the Federal Communications Commission field offices by the agency's Enforcement Bureau. Amateur Radio Newsline's NAWB has the latest.
Several lawmakers have asked FCC Chairman Tom Wheeler about the agency's plan to downsize the agency's Enforcement Bureau field offices during a recent House Communication and Technology Subcommittee hearing on increasing transparency at the agency. Among those posing the question was Missouri Representative Billy Long, who asked why, if the Bureau plans to close just over half of the field offices, that there were 8 top managers in 2009, growing to 16 now. Wheeler said that was unrelated to the plans to retain only 8 and reduce the field agents from just over 60 to just over 30. Wheeler went on to describe the cost for operating the field office as being off the chart and much higher than the average total operating cost of $272 per square foot for the Washington office. He said that the average total cost for operating the Houston office is $620 per square foot, while the figure rises to $2,000 for Portland, Oregon. Representative Bill Johnson of Ohio summed up data supplied by the commission. He said it indicates the field officers take the majority of enforcement actions. He credited the figures at 88% in 2011, 76% in 2012, and 89% in 2013. Given that, he asked Wheeler, how would the agency continue that level of enforcement activity from the few remaining offices? To which Johnson added that if he were to read between the lines, aren't you really talking about a wholesale retreat from the type of enforcement actions undertaken by the field, like interference resolution and abandonment of the proactive enforcement work the field performs? Wheeler replied that there are too many field offices with good people, but they are not being effectively applied. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Stephen Kinfort, NAWB, in Norris Lake, Tennessee.
Several members of the subcommittee, led by Chairman Greg Walden, W7EQI of Oregon, have asked for any of the materials related to the agency's closure plans. Wheeler assured that information would be forthcoming, noting that personal identification information is being removed first. The Consumer Product Safety Commission has announced that the Whistle Group Incorporated of Bentonville, Arkansas, has recalled some of its Jump and Go portable jump start and power supply units. This is due to a potential fire hazard from overheating. The recall involves more than 10,000 of the pocket-sized devices manufactured in China. The notice says that the unit's lithium battery has the potential to overheat, causing it to melt and ignite nearby items, posing a fire hazard to consumers. The recall involves 12-volt jump-and-go units with a model number starting with WJS-3000. According to the ARRL, some Aries and Racies participants use these units as portable 12-volt DC sources. More information on both the device and the action to take if you own one is at tinyurl.com/jump-and-go-recall. It will be several weeks before the South Bend, Indiana Common Council considers a proposal banning the use of cell phones and other handheld electronic devices while driving. This after members of the Health and Public Safety Committee recently tabled the proposed amid questions about cost, implementation, and enforcement. Included by Common Council member Henry Davis, Jr., the proposal would ban the use of cell phones and other handheld electronic devices while driving. Hands-free devices would be allowed, and the ban would not apply to first responders, fleet management systems, dispatching services, music players, CB radios, or emergency situations. The American Radio Relay League voiced concern over the absence of an exemption for amateur radio operators in that proposal. Joseph Lawrence, K9RFZ, is the league's section manager for Indiana, and he noted amateur radio operators assist with emergency dispatch functions and act as weather spotters. The Health and Public Safety Committee will discuss the possible ban further at a special meeting on May the 18th. The council will now consider the matter on May the 26th. Chicago radio station WBBM recently reported on the role played by amateur radio operators in helping the National Weather Service during severe weather. Bill Nelson, observation program leader for the National Weather Service office in Romeoville, Illinois, said that when severe weather hits, ham radio operators are our eyes on the ground, and they can reach out to other hams and tell us what's actually going on out in the real world. Nelson went on to note that when severe weather is in the area, at least one amateur radio operator sets up in the National Weather Service Operations Room right next to the coordinator and communicates with ham operators in the field. He added that it completes the picture of what we do and see on the radar and gives us ground truth. You can listen to the WBBM report on ham radio severe weather assistance to the National Weather Service at tinyurl.com/pjskdqb. The latest edition of the 5 MHz newsletter is now available for free download. This copy features 5 MHz news from the Czech Republic, the UK, Uganda, South Africa, and Australia. Also included is the official International Telecommunications Union Agenda booklet for the 2015 World Administrative Radio Conference, and an article on the HB9 AW receiver project. You will find it in PDF format at tinyurl.com/Q7UQRQW. Turning to the ham radio society scene, the annual Dayton Top Band, or 160-meter operations dinner, will be held Friday evening, May the 15th, at the Crown Plaza Hotel in Dayton, Ohio. This year's special guest speaker is Bob Alphen, K4UEE, presenting a program on the 160-meter experiences from Navassa Island during a recent K1N de-expedition. For more details, go to topbanddinner.com. And contesters from all over the world are planning to attend the annual Dayton Contest Dinner, which will be held on Saturday night, May the 16th, also at the Crown Plaza Hotel. This year's special guest speaker will be ARRL President Kay Kriege, N3KN, with noted contester John Doerr, K1AR, as the Master of Ceremonies. Also, the CQ Contest Hall of Fame Class of 2015 will be announced by CQ Worldwide Contest Director Randy Thompson, K5ZD. More information about this year's gathering is on the web at contestdinner.com. This is Ham Radio's news for today's Radio Amateur. We are the Amateur Radio News Line, with links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org, and being relayed by the volunteer services of the following Radio Amateur. Engineers at NASA's Glenn Research Center in Cleveland, Ohio, are working on a Hall thruster-based propulsion system, one that will propel the first-ever mission to redirect an asteroid for astronauts to explore in 2020. Amateur Radio Newsline's Ralph Squillaci, KK6ITB, reports.
NASA's Asteroid Redirect mission will test a number of new capabilities, like Advanced Solar Electric Propulsion, or SEP, needed for future astronaut expeditions deeper into deep space. To do this, the space agency is taking another look at a device called the Hall Thruster. The Hall Thruster is part of an SEP system that uses 10 times less propellant than equivalent chemical rockets. Hall thrusters work by trapping electrons in a magnetic field and use them to ionize the onboard propellant. The magnetic field also generates an electric field that accelerates the charged ions, creating an exhaust plume of plasma that pushes the spacecraft forward. This method delivers cost-effective, safe, and highly efficient in-space propulsion for long-duration missions. In a recent test, engineers from the Glenn Research Center and the Jet Propulsion Laboratory used a vacuum chamber to simulate the space environment. They then successfully tested a new, higher-power Hall thruster design, which is more efficient and has longer life. In doing so, they proved that the latest thruster can process 3 times the power of previous designs and increase efficiency by 50%. I'm Ralph Squillaci, KK6ITB.
In addition to propelling an asteroid mission, this new thruster could be used to send large amounts of cargo, inhabitants, and other final frontier research, including a human one, to Mars. More is on the web at tinyurl.com/solar-telectric-space. A new tornado simulation technology developed by a ham radio operator and other researchers has brought science a step closer to understanding twisters and how to better prepare for them. Professor Lei Orff, KG4-ULP, and other researchers at Central Michigan University have been working on the project for almost a decade. The modeling program uses equations and data gathered from studying storms. Running on the supercomputer, it then recreates the right conditions for a big tornado to form. According to Professor Orff, what he and his associates have done is to use a modeling program that takes the law of physics and turns them into something a computer can solve. In doing so, it has helped to make it easier to understand what makes these severe weather events happen. As of April the 28th, the Delphi C3HM satellite has been in orbit for 7 years. Wouter Wegelaar, PA3WEG, reports that the satellite still remains healthy and strong. He says that in all those years, there has been very few days where no telemetry was decoded and submitted. He added that Delphi C3 has been praised numerous times as the ideal example of cooperation of radio amateurs and a university. In DX, DL5DI will be active portable 6Y5 from Jamaica between May the 22nd and June the 2nd. Activity will be holiday style on the high frequency bands using an FT-897 transceiver and a dipole antenna. QSL via his home call sign, via the bureau, or electronically using EQSL or Logbook of the World. W5JON tells Newsline that he will once again be on the air as V47JA from his vacation home in St. Kitts from June the 13th to July the 22nd. He plans to be active on 160 through 6 meters using SSB only. QSL direct to W5JON or electronically using Logbook of the World. Foxtrot 5 LIT will be active stroke TF from Iceland between May the 24th and the 30th. This operation will be holiday style, mainly on 20 and possibly 40 meters SSB. QSL using Logbook of the World only. And now, finally this week, a study by IPSOS Research for the National Association of Farm Broadcasting says that farmers still rely on farm format radio with strong listening from the morning through the close of the markets. The study conducted during the 2014 harvest season says that 84% of respondents called local farm radio broadcasting and information important in their daily operation decisions. Among the reasons given for listening were getting prices, following the markets, getting local information, news, and weather, and convenience. The National Association of Farm Broadcasting Director is Tom Brand, and he says that there is a strong connection to the everyday tasks farmers and ranchers perform to the daily programming of farm broadcasters. Brand notes that member stations and networks develop programming based on audience needs in their listening area. That is the power of radio and farm broadcasting. IPSOS Research is a global market research company with worldwide headquarters in Paris, France. Details of the report in PDF format can be found at tinyurl.com/farm-radio. And with thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Penn DX Bulletin, RAIN, the RSGB, the South African Radio League, the Southgate News, Twit TV, Australia's WIA News, and you, our listeners, that's all from Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website, which is located at www.arnewsline.org. And you can also write to us, and hopefully support us, at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. Oh, before we go, a reminder that Amateur Radio Newsline is seeking nominations for its 2015 Young Ham of the Year Award. For consideration, a nominee must have used amateur radio in some way that has benefited his or her community or encouraged technological development directly or indirectly related to communications. Nominees must be 19 years or younger and reside in the United States, including Hawaii, Alaska, Puerto Rico, or any of the Canadian provinces. The individual must also hold a current, valid United States or Canadian amateur radio license. The deadline for submitting the application is May the 30th, 2015, and the decision of the judging committee is final. To obtain an application, send a self-addressed stamped envelope to 2015 Young Ham of the Year Award in care of Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. You can also download a form in Microsoft Word format at www.arnewsline.org/YHOTY. Click on the word here and save that file to print at a later time. Presentation of the 2015 Amateur Radio Newsline Young Ham of the Year Award will take place the weekend of August 15th and 16th at the Huntsville Amateur Radio Ham Fest in Huntsville, Alabama. For now, with producers Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, in Los Angeles, Skeeter Nash, N5ASH, in Topeka, plus our news team worldwide, I'm Fred Vobey, W8HDU, saying 73, and as always, we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2015. All rights reserved.